If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Get ready for an all-new season of 430 Movie, debuting this October with some exciting new theme weeks curated by your favorite 430 Movie hosts. Yes, the 430 Movie is back, and we hope you will be too. Hey, this is Mark A. Altman, co-host of Inglourious Trekkersports. If you're a Star Trek fan who thinks you know everything about the history of Star Trek, check out my best-selling 2-volume oral history of Star Trek from St. Martin's Press, The 50-Year Mission, available wherever books, digital, and audiobooks are sold.
Hi, this is not really George Lucas, but I just want to encourage you to, if you're listening to podcasts, why not listen to The Rebel and the Rogue? You might as well.
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman, and if you're a Star Trek fan, you should check out my new science fiction TV show, Pandora, airing every Tuesday on the CW or anytime on the CW app. Check it out. Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Doctorman, and we are the
Inglourious Trekkersports. Welcome back. Last week, I'm a major...
Previously on Inglourious Trekkersports.
I'm amazed you're in the Hall of Justice. I'm amazed that you're tuning in again after, you know, Darren brutally took down City
now,
Bitch forever. No, I'm kidding. Last week, we did Academy of the Overrated, and I thought it was actually a fascinating discussion about Star Trek episodes that are perceived as being, I don't know, better than they are or just beloved more than they warrant. I don't know the problem what you're saying. So we decided in order to tip the scales back towards justice, we would do Academy of the Underrated, where we sort of shine a light on some episodes that maybe don't get the love they deserve, you know, because we all know, you know, you hear it's always Best of Both Worlds, Trouble with Tribbles, you know, Yesterday's Enterprise. And we're not saying these aren't great episodes. They are. But it's like, you know, it's time for some other episodes to, you know, get some love. Let's give them some love. And that's what today's episode is all about. It's about showing some love for some underrated Star Trek episodes. So once again, we are joined by, from the Burnett Work, Mr. Robert Meyer Burnett. Welcome back, Rob.
It's great to be back.
On temporary loan from the Burnett Work.
You can follow his... His insights and observations about pop culture on his YouTube channel on Robservations from the Burnett Network. And then we have writer-producer Ashley Edward Miller is back. Ashley, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I am so excited, and I cannot adequately conceal it.
That is fantastic. You're so exciting, you just can't hide it. Welcome. So today,
welcome.
Did I say that already?
Yes.
I did. I'm freaking
welcome
tired.
Again.
I'm so jet lagged. You have no, I don't know why I scheduled this for today, other than we had run out of episodes. So, but I'm just happy to see you all. That's what it comes down to. I'm just happy to see you all. And if I suddenly grow quiet, it means I'm falling asleep.
And it's really good to be doing these again in the wonderful Electric Surge studio.
Well, absolutely. I missed Bill Ritter's smiling face. And there he is, our engineer, our sound mixer, our inspiration.
Yes.
Bill has been, you know, such a supporter. I think when we started doing these podcasts, he's like, "What is this nonsense that I'm doing?"
He's
here?
He's nodding.
He's
very
I do
strongly.
Movies and TV, and what am I doing with? I don't even know what a podcast is. And over the last year, I think we've won him over. I mean, he's watching Star Trek. He's watching these shows. He's weighing in. He's wearing our shirts, and it's really, we couldn't do it without the support of people like Bill and Natalie and everyone here, and Dean Devlin, who's been such a champion. And soon we'll be announcing the video podcast will be available. So you know, if you've seen Clash of the Titans and stare at the Medusa too long, you know what happens, but you'll get a chance to actually see what it's like to be inside the Electric Surge studios where we record the podcast live. And
wait till you see what we're wearing.
or not wearing in the case of Ashley E. Miller.
Let's just say okay. that every episode is naked time for Ashley
yeah,
Edward Miller.
It really is. It's a choice.
Nice
it's
place you have here, Mr. Altman.
You're going to have strategically placed
Did I mention I'm jet-lagged? Okay, so... there goes half our audience. Okay, so...
But we're going to get a whole different half coming in.
That's oh, right. No. There you go. So today we're going to talk about underrated Star Trek episodes. And, I'm not going to waste any time. I want to go straight to Robert Meyer Burnett. And I have a feeling I might know what he's going to do, but he might surprise me.
No, I'm not going to surprise you. You know exactly what I'm going to say.
Oh, good, because, I didn't pick it because I knew you would.
I'm going to say this is one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek ever. It's from the original series, and it never gets enough love. I'm not going to say the alternative factor.
No, I know, but that was a guilty pleasure. That was our second episode. We did guilty pleasure.
I've talked about the virtues of this episode my entire life, and you know what? I'm going to do it again.
All right.
Because you're a big fan of one-celled organisms.
That is, you got it. That's exactly right. Ladies and gentlemen, second season's The Immunity Syndrome.
Captain's log, stardate 4308.8.
The Intrepid, it just died. And the 400 Vulcans aboard, all dead.
The stars are gone.
According to the life monitors, we're dying. We're all dying.
I cannot say what it is, Captain, but I would say it has found us.
Grant me my own kind of dignity. How can I grant you what I don't understand?
Contact
in 6 seconds.
Spock, come in.
Come in.
Contact lost, sir.
Power levels are dead, sir.
You may have just written our epitaph, Mr. Stone.
Is one of my of the original series, second season, is one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, even as a little kid, because first of all, it one of the things about the episode is it's so dire. Mm-hmm. It's one of those Star Trek episodes where literally the fate of the universe hangs in the balance. It has an interesting science fiction concept, the idea of a single-celled 11,000-mile-long organism that is literally draining the life force from everything around it. It has destroyed solar systems. It has destroyed a starship full of Vulcans. And it is truly one of the most visually arresting things I ever saw when I was a kid. Mm. It made me fall in love with science fiction. And the relationship...
Your behavior is arrested, Mr. Krakow.
The relationship between Spock and McCoy is tested. And the relationship of everybody is tested. And Kirk is put into an impossible situation where he must decide which one of his best friends is he going to sacrifice. The episode, to me, is one of the most wonderful episodes of Star Trek. Its only drawback is it doesn't have an original score.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is the only thing about the episode. They recycle music, very familiar music.
Well, it's so funny you say that because my one criticism of the Immunity Syndrome is that it's very redolent of the Doomsday Machine. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the score is mostly from the Doomsday Machine.
And that is the only thing. I mean, to me, a lot of people talk about Star Trek the Motion Picture. And to me, the Immunity Syndrome was the reason I must love Star Trek the Motion Picture as much as I do is because this idea of this cloud and you're penetrating this cloud and people always talk
about,
well.
You just love that you're penetrating something. That's why Rob loves that episode.
No, but I mean, truly, everyone always says, Star Trek the Motion Picture is like The Changeling. I'm like, okay. But really, to me, Star Trek the Motion Picture is the Immunity Syndrome, and it touches on one of my favorite episodes, and the relationship between McCoy and Spock and Kirk is very similar. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think Star Trek the Motion Picture is the closest to a Star Trek episode that any of the movies ever got to. Mm-hmm. And people are like, how do you... I'm like, because you need to watch the Immunity Syndrome. I love the character interplay. I love the visual effects. I love the science fiction premise. I love the reveal of the creature, mm-hmm. which is one of the most amazing reveals in Star Trek history. There's nothing about that episode I don't like except the use of the library music, every time you're watching it, all you're thinking about is the Doomsday Machine.
Where's library?
Well, because the music is so indelible that, and it was only, it's not something, I think it was only ever used for that episode again. It was used for Doomsday Machine and then Immunity Syndrome. And it's also the one of the great examples, like Doomsday Machine, of how to do a bottle show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
I think
you know,
it's a perfect episode of Star Trek.
I don't disagree with you. I like that episode. I don't love it the way you do, and few people would or could. But I do think that it has some of the best McCoy Kirk Spock byplay.
Absolutely.
I mean, when Spock says, "You should have wished me luck, Doctor." Oh my God! Right. I mean, that's so great.
When I was a kid, I would be like, "Oh man, I felt terrible whenever he said that."
Right? Yeah, yeah. I know.
I felt terrible for Spock and for McCoy.
Yeah. They're both fighting to go on that mission, right. And it's real. It has a shuttlecraft in it. Let's face it. Any episode that has a shuttlecraft in it is cool because the shuttlecraft was
except
awesome.
The Galileo 7.
No, the Galileo 7's great.
It's the
Galileo
7 proves the rule.
I love the Galileo 7. You see, Leonard didn't like it because he said any situation where Spock is the captain isn't a cool episode. But you know, it has the life size Galileo.
Star Trek 2.
It has the lost in space aliens. It has. You know, I love that. I love that episode. I like. And has an amoeba. Quasar.
Wait a minute.
The Murasaki effect.
Hold on.
Talking about Immunity Syndrome.
I want one more point to make about Immunity Syndrome. Immunity Syndrome was a Star Trek episode, like many became, where I actually pulled out a dictionary because as a little kid, I didn't know what syndrome meant.
Oh.
I didn't understand. And so that was like
Star Trek taught you vocabulary.
Well, that's when I didn't understand a word. Like Adonais,
right.
I would say, "Who Adonais. Mourns for Adonis?" And then I'm like,
"That's not
that's
how
not
it's spelled,
Adonis." And
like
I had to go look up Adonais. What is that? It's not a word. I mean, it's a
proper name.
It's
yeah,
yes, it's a name. But I that's another way Star Trek taught me things.
Absolutely,
interesting.
Well, I really dig that episode, and I'll tell you what I always liked about it. When I was a kid, the things that I particularly enjoyed were encountering other starships or other elements of Starfleet.
Right.
And seeing those ships, especially, there was always something that was very cool about seeing one that was all screwed up. And certainly the Immunity Syndrome gives us that. I love the idea that...
But we don't see it.
Millions of voices suddenly cried out
and we're suddenly silenced. Right.
You know what I mean? Like that we're...
And that there's a ship full of Vulcans,
exactly.
Which we didn't know.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
A
that's
ship
what
full
got
of
me
Vulcans,
thinking. I thought,
a beaker full of
well,
death.
That's interesting,
boy.
Right? It made me think about the larger world.
And on Fridays.
Yes.
Right? It's like it was... It's just one of those story points that makes me realize it's more than just having just our ship out there and doing things that they're actually living inside of a place that exists for them beyond just the story, which I always found very awesome.
And it's also the only episode that Star Wars actually, as you pointed out, directly ripped
off.
Yes. Oh, sure. Totally.
It absolutely.
Oh, yeah. When
off.
Spock feels the Intrepid being destroyed,
right.
It's the exact same thing as Obi-Wan Kenobi feeling the destruction of Alderaan. It's the exact same scene.
It's almost, he almost says the same thing.
Yeah. Totally. Which once again proves Star Trek is better than Star. No, but no, absolutely. I mean, look, there's so much to like in that episode. I think it's a good bit, and it is really the height of optical visual effects at the time.
Yep.
I mean, is Frank Vanderveer who did the amoeba, Jessica Van Puttermaker. it's so beautiful, the effects in that.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I mean, state of the art, 1968.
It's certainly nothing like it
has
ever been seen on television.
This
before.
Is before 2001 comes out, and it's incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, a really good choice, Rob, for an underrated Star Trek
episode.
But
it's not like you didn't see it coming.
No, we knew.
It's got one of the sort of cool Kirk thinking lines ever. Him wondering if they were themselves antibodies in the galaxy, intended to protect it from,
It has a lot going on. Like I personally prefer like Doomsday Machine and Star Trek the Motion Picture, but I get it. I wouldn't begrudge the choice. I think it's a great
choice.
It's funny though because I was a little disappointed Rob picked it. I was kind of hoping he would pick the Survivors because now I'm going to end up having to pick that. But
that was my second one.
Yeah, I kind of figured.
I didn't even decide till they started recording this episode.
Yeah, yeah, because we love the Survivors, and you know I don't know if I'm going to pick the Survivors.
You mean
because
the animated episode, the Survivor?
No. I'm talking about the Survivors on Next Generation.
Next time on Star Trek: The Next Generation. the crew discovers the sole survivors of an alien massacre.
The attacking force spared you for some reason.
They're guarding a dark secret.
Stop!
A mystery that's destroying Troy's brain. A threat that's attacking the Enterprise.
Commence rapid fire with all weapons on full.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about this at length on our 51 Greatest Star Trek episodes. It is an episode that Rob and I come to time and time again to extol an underrated Star Trek The Next Generation episode in which we find these two people stranded on a planet that had been obliterated and apparently by the Hoosnock, the unfortunately named alien adversary. And just a brilliant performance by John Anderson.
That episode, I made required viewing for my writing staff
at the Academy?
On my show. We were trying to figure out.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Like,
and
I actually,
had
we had Star Trek Day. I made them watch The Survivors and Yesterday's Enterprise.
Can I ask you, because I know you can't really talk about the show you're working on, but I want to ask you specifically with your writing staff. I assume they're younger.
Yes.
Were they familiar with Star Trek at all?
Oh, they knew what it was. It had been told around the fire to
they
them.
Knew
but
it,
they
knew it was that thing with Chris Pine.
Right, but I don't. You know,
see,
one
that's
of them
what we should have had for Overrated. Star Trek 2009, that's what we should have talked about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we should talk about the movie some other time.
I mean, my staff is, okay. I've got Steve, who obviously knows Star Trek.
Steve Melching, for those of you at home who don't know him.
Oh, that's right. Steve, he's a good guy. He's on 4:30 Movie, which you should
coming
also
back in
to.
October, yeah.
But I've got two younger writers who are not as steeped in the world of Star Trek as we are, one of whom has never really watched Star Trek at all, except by accident. And so sitting down and watching Yesterday's Enterprise and watching The Survivors, I think, was kind of eye-opening. Like, they didn't really realize how good those episodes were.
What did you show? What were the episodes you showed to your writing staff?
I just told you, but it's okay.
No, you said The Survivors.
And Yesterday's Enterprise.
And that's it?
Yeah, those were the ones. Because there was because the thing that I was trying to convey to them was just how you could take these big science fiction ideas and make them emotional.
But see, here's the thing. You're like, oh, Mark, why weren't you listening? He didn't say. I'm waiting for the original Star Trek episode.
Right.
Oh,
no, he
said two episodes, which I'm like, okay, right, okay. Survivors, mm-hmm. and I probably get it. What else? And then he stopped.
Right.
Which I find confounding.
I mean, look.
He's young.
Yeah. I mean, look, if I had all the time in the world, I would give them a whole list of here are the things that you should watch, children, and come back and talk to me. But I just found The Survivors so affecting, and it was affecting in the service of this really big science fiction idea that it was just, I thought, a great example of how to do that, how to take something very heady and make it feel very visceral and emotional.
Huh. Yeah, see, so that's a big thumbs up for The Survivors.
Well, and another thing about that, at the end, one of my favorite moments in all of Next Generation is Picard, is Patrick Stewart's performance when he's trying to wrap his head around exactly what the Dowd has done. Has run. And he's like, we have nothing. The scope of your crime is beyond our justice. I can't even. It's on a galactic, universal scale. And he committed genocide.
Yeah.
I mean, this creature actually wiped out an entire civilization of sentient beings out of anger. And is there a bigger criminal in the entire Star Trek universe?
Probably not.
And yet,
he wiped out all the Hoosnock everywhere.
Forget Khan. Kevin Uxbridge.
Kevin Uxbridge. Uxbridge!
You've managed to kill absolutely everyone in the universe, but...
And his performance, I mean, my God. Star Trek, The Next Generation did not have... The way Star Trek, the original series, had amazing guest stars. Star Trek, The Next Generation did not always pick the best.
They did
not.
But he was great.
He was one of the most wonderful. I mean,
and
an
Haney was good, who played his wife.
His wife was great, and they seemed so natural. But that moment at the end, when he reveals what he's done, that gets me every time.
Super powerful.
Gives me shivers.
And that's a fine choice. So let me tell you what my choice is. Another next year. No, I'm not. I'm gonna go to Darren. It's Darren's turn. So let's go to Darren. That's a fine choice.
See, you confuse me. I think I am going to pick the Return of the Archons.
Captain's log, stardate 3192.1. Trying to find some trace of the starship Archon that disappeared 100 years ago, a search party has been sent to the planet below. Spock, those power readings you took, are they
powerful enough to destroy a starship?
There's another one. We gotta get out of here. You know what they're capable of. Only you.
I am Landru. For the good of the body, you must die.
Oh. See, we were talking about that off the series. Air before we started. And I don't know how it came up. Well, we're talking about the Will of Landru.
Yeah. But as an episode that is often overlooked.
Yeah. Not by Ben Stiller. He called his company Red Hour Productions
after the festival. You come for the festival, eh? Yeah.
that guy's the best.
It has pretty much a ton of the original series tropes that we are used to.
Yes.
But it's kind of like the first time that a lot of those happened, where we come across a society that is seemingly normal. Mm-hmm. But there's dark secrets.
Yeah.
And there's other things going on.
And the possession of our principal characters.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, in finally dealing with a god who is a computer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The first of many.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's it handles these for the first time in a very sort of deft way, and it's very sneaky. Mm-hmm. But it's also there are a lot of sort of very old school actors in it, and it's sort of out of its time. It's a very odd episode.
Yeah,
and
it's all set on the back lot, but you don't really bump on it.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, you know, the fact that it's like this 20th century like apartment, right, brownstone thing, but it never bothered you. It's right. Like now you'd have to build all that in CGI and have to be super futuristic. But then it was like, okay, what do we have on the back lot?
Exactly.
Okay, we got these buildings. Okay, so this
is
our planet. It's interesting because I'm trying to like poke holes in it, but I'm like, no, you know, that's actually quite a good episode.
There's also a lot of really, there's some really dark undercurrents to that episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically the Purge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before,
you know,
yes.
For 12 hours, all crime is, mm-hmm, you can do, and they probably don't, they don't really get into the fact that murder probably, mm-hmm, happens, because I'm sure it does. And
but everybody's clothes are ripped when they come back.
Yeah, and it's a really, I mean, they push that as far as they could go. There's that one
in 1966
where one woman goes, you know, she throws her hands back and screams. That's as close as they could get to what they were insinuating.
Yes. Right.
And it
Friday night at Gene Roddenberry's.
The fact that
we would always have those parties on Thursday night, because Friday was always recovery time.
But no, it's got a really dark, and even what the computer knows about humanity, is really disturbing.
No, because For as screwed up as it is, it works.
Right.
And it has for a long time.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, this is one of those sort of cowboy diplomacy episodes that the Enterprise sort of interferes with a society that is actually
functional,
working and functional.
Yeah, yeah, you break it, you buy it.
I mean, people come from all around to participate in the festival.
Come from the valley, eh? Yeah.
Well, is this the first instance of Kirk talking a computer into destroying itself?
Yes.
I think so.
That was like one of his moves.
But it was like a Gene Kuhn thing. And then I remember there's a great memo from DC Fontana where she's complaining to Gene, and Gene saying, you know, we've done this a lot now. Right. Can we come up with another plot? Because after a while, I think after the Changeling, it's kind of like, okay, you know, how many times are we going to talk a computer to death? And we need to, but you know, Shatner, he can do anything.
Well,
so.
But in a way, I mean, I'll draw a line here between the Return of the Archons and the Borg, mm-hmm, because this civilization, technology somehow in the past or whoever, created Landru to bring order to chaos,
right?
And it had a very dark result, being the festival, even though they don't get into how dark it is.
Yeah.
Whereas I see the Borg, somebody was using technology probably to help civilization, to help humanity, transhumanism or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And the unintended result was that we were then enslaved and our free will was sort of removed from us, and the monstrous nature of what the Borg collective, what ended up happening was terrifying and stripping people. Whereas the idea of Landru, the darkest nature of humanity, in order to manage that rather than through laws and through, say, the Bill of Rights, we're gonna allow the dark nature of humanity to bubble forth once a month or whenever they were going
to
do it.
But now we do it constantly on social media.
The question, is that a better way of dealing with the dark side of humanity than the regular way, where it is more incipient and more quiet?
And more repressed and letting it out.
I don't know, Darren. I'll bring on the festival, buddy. I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to drink that Kool-Aid of yours.
I'm just raising it as a question because it's, you know, the prime directive, which I think wasn't really resolved at that point.
Right, sure.
Says that
probably the reason why it exists now.
Well, that we're not to interfere with a normal progression of a society.
Right, functioning society.
Functioning society and growing society. And I think that the argument here is that
it's
the society
growing.
Is not
it's
growing
not
at all.
Yeah.
But as far as sustaining itself,
mm-hmm.
it does. And it works fine for what that society is.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Well, that's an undercurrent of the whole first season of the original series. This side of paradise, Elias Sandoval and his group of people, they've created a bucolic society that is beautiful and lovely, but it's had an external source of that, and it's stagnant. It's not going anywhere.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, you put it in the time period of the 60s, you know, where people felt, you know, looked down on the flower children and the hippies that, like, yeah, they were just living in the moment, but they weren't moving society forward. And it's that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Brad Pitt Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Damn hippies. Yeah. But, you know, and there was definitely among the establishment the sense that, like, what were they really accomplishing, you know, that they weren't evolving. So, I mean,
the lilies of the field, they toil not, neither do they spin.
Which is a great line that Star Trek used, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Spock says that at some point. Yeah. About the... Does he say in Tribbles, I think?
Yeah.
But ironically, not about the space hippies.
That's right. Not about the space hippies. Now, when we do worst episodes, clearly the Way to Eden would have to be on that.
Yeah, brother.
So your pick was Return of the Archons. Again, very interesting pick. I would say that I do not think we should have Star Trek The Motion Picture on this list because...
No.
Although I think we would all agree that it is underrated.
Absolutely.
But we've talked about it throughout the year and we'll continue
and we
to talk
continue
about
to
it.
So.
And so I don't want to spend any time talking more
about
Star Trek.
We're talking about televised Star Trek.
Televised incarnations of Star Trek. So Ashley, what would your pick be for underrated Star Trek episode?
Hail, hail, fire and snow.
No.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm kidding. For the love of God, man. Not even I am that big a fan.
As you believe, so shall you do.
No.
So shall you do.
Is actually, I believe that this episode of Deep Space Nine wound up on our top 50 list, rightfully so. Mm. But there's our list and there's what everybody else thinks about. My pick for most underrated episode is Deep Space Nine's Progress.
Mm.
First Officer Kira
Anago!
Joins a rebellion.
Right now, she stands a pretty good chance of being out of uniform permanently.
No!
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
First season episode.
Wow.
Deep cut.
Yeah.
That's some bold words
deep cut
right
nine.
There.
Thank you. I love that episode.
The first cut is the deepest.
The premise of it is that Major Kira is sent to convince a man to evacuate his home because the Bajoran government needs to generate electricity. And so they need to evacuate the moon that he's been living on, and he won't go. And the episode is – and he's played by Brian Keith, who is amazing. And the episode is really about his relationship with Kira and making her see that the position that she's taking and the way that she is taking it, she is not unlike the Cardassian occupiers who came before her. And it forces some really interesting conflict with Sisko. And it has a resolution that I found just incredibly moving, because Kira and this farmer, you know, they really do connect. They have a real relationship between them. We can tell that she cares about him. We can tell that she's been affected by his arguments, but she still has a job to do. And we're reminded it's not made easy for us by saying, well, the job isn't actually important. So maybe Kira just needs to do the right thing and help this man stay in his house. It's actually, the case is made that the job is actually important and that it must be done. And worse than that, if Kira won't do it, somebody else will come in behind her and do it anyway.
Right.
So her solution to the problem is actually very James T. Kirk. She burns down his house. She makes it impossible for him to stay. She essentially forces him to evacuate to save his life.
Right.
And it's just, it's incredibly well constructed. I can just watch that episode over and over. It's never going to be, you know, in anybody's, you know, list of here's my top 10 that I'm thinking about as best Star Trek episodes ever.
Right.
But I love it, and I think it's totally worth a watch.
Wow. Great episode.
That's
really.
That's a great call. I'm going to go watch that today.
Thank you.
It's funny because I think that what happens is when you hear first season Deep Space Nine, everybody talks about Duet, and understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
But Progress is a really sensational episode. That's a really great choice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know. I don't know.
What are your four choices for?
Well, I mean, underrated? I kind of focus, but I'm a little like wary of repeating myself. I really always point to 1100101, you know, the Bynar episode.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, the crew docks at a star base for repairs.
I'm getting an indication of possible trouble in main engineering.
But kidnappers trick the crew into an emergency evacuation.
Abandon ship!
Stealing the Enterprise and its captain.
But this vessel must not fall into hostile hands.
Set auto-destruct sequence. Now.
It's a deadly countdown to disaster on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
1100101.
And you're right, that one. And I think it's, you know, the whole where Minuet is created on the holodeck to keep Riker busy while the Bynars are stealing the Enterprise. And I thought the Bynars were sort of an interesting alien species. And Minuet was a really intriguing character. And I guess it also struck me at a time when Next Generation was really crap. And then suddenly there was this.
It was trying to find itself.
Interesting episode where, like, there was like cool effects, and there was like the Starbase from Star Trek III. That was the time where I actually was excited about things from Star Trek III showing up. And you know, I it was a great Riker episode, and it was about character and had a cool alien species, and it just came at a time where I like, you know, it indicated to me that. Wow, maybe there is potential. We talked about Heart of Glory being an episode like that in the first season, that despite everybody dismissing how bad the first season is, there are these glimmers of hope early on with that episode and with Heart of Glory, where you're thinking, oh, well, maybe they'll find their way.
Right.
And then, you know, of course they did. So that's an episode I like. I think Ensign Roe. That's an episode people don't talk about a lot. It's a great episode.
Great episode. It also really expands the Bajoran Cardassian mythology leading into Deep Space Nine.
But it Michelle also Forbes puts into contrast Patrick Stewart's dynamic. The sadness that she didn't become a part of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. But Nana Visitor was great. Yeah. Like, I don't miss Michelle Forbes in Deep Space Nine.
I do.
Do you?
Yeah, because I thought Michelle Forbes is extremely good.
Rob, she was your next door neighbor for a while.
Michelle Forbes was my next door neighbor, and I was the first person to tell her that she was coming back to Battlestar Galactica after she was dead.
Oh, that's really funny.
But I want to throw one out for you that nobody ever talks about, and the only reason that I watch this between talking to both Brian Fuller, who worked on the show, and John Ottman, who loves the show, they both gave me lists of Voyager episodes to watch.
Yeah, okay.
And John Ottman gave me a Voyager. I have to say, Mark, when we were during the Sci-Fi Universe era, when Voyager began, we developed a love-hate relationship with both Voyager and Brandon Braga at the time.
No, we never had a problem with Brandon. It was always a problem with Voyager.
Well,
we weren't Voyager fans.
Yeah. We made him out to be a devil. Not that we love Brandon.
Yeah, we talked to Brandon on the episode where we you know, how Amanda did that whole...
Yeah, we love... No, we
is
love,
Brandon
we
Braga
love,
the devil.
He was
Brandon
like the,
was very funny because he said, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
No, he was great, but he became our foil. He became part of... He was like on the de facto staff of Sci-Fi Universe without actually writing for the magazine.
He was a very, very good sport.
He was awesome. But one of the episodes that I have become sort of obsessed with is the seventh season Voyager two-parter Workforce.
There are only 9 new episodes left before Star Trek Voyager's series finale. They were abducted, their memories erased.
My employee number is 8586.
Now, how will the crew return to Voyager when they don't know who they really are?
They're not going to leave willingly.
Now, Workforce, I love this episode. And basically, it's one of these episodes where the crew wakes up, the crew's on this planet, and they're like working. They're like salaried people, employees of this. And, I'd never seen this two-part episode. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, and apparently, I don't want to ruin it, but there are people out there that basically commandeer your spaceship, take your crew, and reprogram their brains and send them out to become the workforce on this planet to like become
so
working.
It's Walmart,
but it's kind of like that. I mean, it's and I think it's a delightful two-parter is completely unsung, and you get
temp
to see the characters playing people they're not. You know, and it's, I just find it to be a delightfully wonderful Star Trek two-parter.
You know, there's a great Voyager episode that season. I think it's that season. I can't believe I'm saying the words great Voyager
episode. I was
having
that reaction.
But the one in which, and I don't remember the name, I think you picked it for your list, where the doctor, they think that the Voyager is evil.
Living witness.
Living witness.
Imagine turning the starship Voyager.
Target the first city. And fire.
Into the warship Voyager.
When diplomacy fails, there's only one alternative. Violence.
Now, the imagining is over. The crew will turn into cold-blooded killers.
Resistance is futile.
And history will turn into anarchy.
No, this is impossible.
On the next Star Trek Voyager.
And it's this Rashomon where they completely feel as though Voyager is evil and they're going to put the Doctor on trial and he survived. I mean, and it's a really...
It takes place hundreds of years. It's one of my favorite Voyager episodes.
It's a terrific episode. It's very clever. And I think that's certainly an underrated episode as well. I really like that. And
To me, Workforce is the Gambit. The two-parter Gambit
that's
from the seventh season.
Gambit is a great underrated episode.
I agree. Gambit is so much fun.
That's the closest Next Generation ever got, other than Devil's Due, to doing the original series.
Yeah.
Like, Gambit felt like an original series episode to a point. You know,
they brought back Robin Curtis as the intelligence officer.
And Patrick seems to be having fun, and the Iridians are in it, and it's just fun.
So and you got Richard Lynch,
right?
Is in that episode.
Amming it up. Yeah.
I mean, and I see Workforce as the equivalent. Gambit Part 1 and 2 is
and
like
people
Workforce
don't know who Richard Lynch. Richard Lynch was the bad guy in every 70s and 80s TV. You know, in A-Team and all this. He was one of the original, in the original Battlestar Galactica. He's one of the Borellian Gnomon. You know, he had this deep, grovelly voice. And I guess his face had been scarred as a fire.
So he
was a scary dude. And by all accounts, a lovely man.
Right.
And
back when there were actual character actors who got work.
Yeah. He was great. I mean, you totally remember him. Him and the guy who always was the biker in the shows. There was always a biker episode of like the A-Team and Charlie. It was always the same guy. So Richard Lynch was always playing the same role in all these shows. I'm going to have to watch. I've never seen Workforce. I'm going to have to watch it.
I don't remember it. I mean, I know I watched every episode of Voyager, and you're saying that, and I'm like, is this a parallel universe? What happened? Where
I had never seen this episode. I didn't even know it was a two-part episode. Nobody had told me about this episode. And I, you know, I was so... When I watched it, I'm like, this is delightful.
Yeah.
You might not feel the same way, but there's...
I want to watch it. I, you know, it's funny because after we did that list, I had never seen that Living Witness. And I went and watched it based on your recommendation, listening to the show.
I was listening to it live, but I listened to the show, and I thought it was good. I really liked it.
I mean, that when you're seeing the Voyager, the alternate history where they're portrayed as the villains, you know, they're these horrible people, and you find out, oh, it's a museum.
I also watched Timeless, which I thought was a good episode of Voyager, you know, which was interesting. Yep. I mean, it wasn't without its merits.
It's just, it was schizophrenic. I mean, Blink of an Eye is still one of my favorite Star Trek episodes, but Workforce, all the cast gets to do something interesting. It's good. Yeah. It's good stuff. But it's one of those things where nobody ever talks about it. Even people who like Voyager. I'm like, I love Workforce. People are like, what are you talking about? They don't even know.
That's us with the Survivors. It's like, you know, you're like, remember Marina? Can't stop hearing the music box? And she's going crazy. It's like, what are you talking about? No, the music box, remember? And it's playing the music. And she's going nuts. And Kevin Uxbridge from the Hoosnock. It's like... What show is this? Lost in Space? Right. It's like no, it was on Next Generation. Was that before Best of Both Worlds? After Best of Both Worlds? It's before Best of Both Worlds.
It's got great matte paintings in it.
It got great matte. Yeah, got that, and that little house in Malibu that they filmed at. It's amazing what a little location filming can do to open up a show.
Can we circle back to 1101001?
Yeah, of course.
Quickly? So you mentioned the use of the Star Trek III space dock. Mm-hmm. I have to say, like, that was, for the first season of Next Generation, one of my very favorite effect shots. Mm-hmm. Like, I could watch that again and again and again, watching the Enterprise-D head into it, because for the first time on that show, I understood the scale of the Enterprise.
Mm. But it's not.
I understand that.
That's the problem.
I understand that, but for the first time, there was something that, to me, gave it context for understanding.
Your premise is completely... detached
okay, before
from reality.
You, wait, before you get angry about
maybe
that.
Maybe they built them bigger.
Before you get angry about that, I want to tell you a story. Micah Kuda told me, working on the Next Generation Blu-rays, we talked about this a lot, and I would talk to Micah Kuda about scale issues. And, of course, when the Enterprise is backing out of space dock, it barely clears the doors. And the Enterprise D is about 8 times larger by volume than the original series or the refit Enterprise. So there's no way that the entire space dock would have to be like 8 times larger
it's
than
like
the Star
the
Trek
poo
III
and the blustery space day. Yes.
Canonista, Canonista.
So they use. Right. So I said. So Mike Akuda told me a story that this bothered him as well. But it was Bob Justman, and Mike Akuda suggested, well, why don't we just have the Enterprise like docked? So you can reuse the shot, but docked outside. Mm. And Bob Justman said, then we would have to, we couldn't do that. You know, we'd have to change that original element. We can either have that space docked or not. You can either see it or not. And we'll have a scale issue.
Right.
And Mike Akuda reluctantly said, okay, I think you're right. So we've got all that production value in the show. Even though the scale is wrong, I know, Darren, you're going to.
Darren's apoplectic. Darren's very upset about this.
I hate it.
I could care less. I just imagined bigger.
Of course. Well, everyone imagined bigger.
All you have to do, look, in my mind, I reconcile it. The door is just bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the door on the other side for the bigger
shot. 24th century doors. They made bigger doors than they had in the
21st
century.
Yeah,
but we don't know that.
Yes,
it's bigger. It's they made it larger. It's
look, I'd rather think that they built a space dock 8 times bigger that looks exactly the same.
They had to build a space dock that was bigger to fit the ships.
And that's stupid.
Can I be happy?
Of course you can be happy.
This is why you can't have nice things.
But that's right. This is how I'm happy, by destroying your happiness.
Oh,
apparently.
Man, that is just, I mean, I just...
Well,
no,
you know that's dumbass on you.
You know that's not
double dumbass on you. Yeah, so, okay, so I don't know where we are on this whole binar thing, whatever it is called.
By the way, if I could just, that episode...
No Requiem for Methuselah.
The end of that episode is so great. Why didn't you ask us for help? Well, you could have said no.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love that because it was so simple and yet so true. If you're understanding
if you're binary, it's yes or no.
We couldn't, there's no maybe in how we think. You're either going to help us or not. We couldn't take the risk.
Right.
I love that. I still love that. That's so Star Trekian.
And it's the first time where Riker actually had a character where he wasn't just some stiff Captain Kirk wannabe, where he actually got to play something that was authentic and germane to him. And Frakes
had
some
totally
fun.
Goofy in the episode.
He is, but you know, they're still finding the character. He didn't have the beard yet.
And Patrick Stewart and him have that great scene with Minuet when he's Patrick Stewart's commenting on how realistic she is, and they're like broing down, having in a nightclub.
Yeah, Carol Kramis was great.
So what if it's in the holodeck?
Yeah,
can I just say, isn't it amazing what a beard tends to do for Star Trek characters?
Oh, yes.
Whether it's Riker or it's Sisko.
You got to stop because this is the subject of next week's episode.
Oh, really?
The beard. No.
Because I guess you'd also have to discuss the LaForge corollary where the beard didn't help.
Do anything for
it. It just looked wrong.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
And is second season Riker actually from the Mirror Universe?
Oh, wow. Next week on somebody else's podcast.
Right? That's right. Or the many lives of Riker. Tom Riker, showing back up on Deep Space Nine.
I think there are a lot of Deep Space Nine episodes that could qualify for our underrated. And I'm just going to cite two of them. I think they don't get the love of, you know, what do the episodes get the love? Trials and Tribulations gets the love. Duet gets the love. Incomprehensibly, What We Left Behind gets the love, which I think is not very good. There are a couple other episodes that get, you know, Silent Legis.
Romulan.
Oh, well, of course. And the Pale Moonlight is the one that deservedly gets the most love. But I think there are a couple of smaller episodes which are, you know, really, really well done. I mean, the Siege of AR 358, I think, is a really, you know, Saving Private Ryan done Deep Space Nine. And it's terrific. And, of course, in that episode, Nog, who is like this kind of joke of a character, who suddenly gets this incredible arc, which pays off, and it's only a paper moon. And, you know, that by all rights should be a ridiculous episode. Vic Fontaine sort of is this faux Tony Bennett / Frank Sinatra character, who's one of the best characters in the show.
Right.
And he has to deal with, you know, Nog, who's nursing his, who now doesn't have a leg and feels useless. And he looked for solace and escape in the holodeck. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing what that show pulls off. I mean, when I was writing my book and talking to other people, a lot of veterans who really took a lot of away from Deep Space Nine, who really helped them deal with their own PTSD and their own, you know, issues, really relate to that episode. And I don't think it's an episode that necessarily gets a lot of love. And that's one of my problems with the documentary. I think the documentary was a lot of jokey jokes thing.
Yeah.
And, the opening musical number, it never talked about really why Deep Space Nine is so good. It never did the deep dive into what's really remarkable about that show. It was more like, we had a lot of fun and it was cool and people don't like it, but now it's cool.
I don't think they were ever in a position because they didn't watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things is, you know, when you're covering... When you're covering the people that are actually creating a television series,
they're clueless about their own show. Yes,
yeah, their experience with people who watch the show, it'll never be the same.
Right.
They'll never understand the relationship a viewer has, especially when it comes to Star Trek. I don't think anybody who's ever worked on Star Trek
understands its appeal.
Nope, none of them. You could talk to the actors; they only have got talking points that they've gleaned from other things they've read that other people wrote.
Yes,
right.
But they themselves will never understand because that's just not their experience. No, it shouldn't be.
And then they just grabbed a bunch of cosplayers, you know, at the Vegas con and said, "Why do you love Deep Space Nine? It's very deep. You know, it's like,
it's got space in it.
It's got space in it. And
nine
different.
Of them."
And so I don't think it really, you know, no pun intended, did a deep dive into why Deep Space Nine is such a remarkable show. And instead it's this big kind of silly, frivolous documentary that doesn't really do justice to the subject that it's covering.
Are we kind of saying then that the ultimate underrated episode of Star Trek is Star Trek Deep Space Nine as a whole?
I mean, you certainly could make that case.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Well, also, you know, whereas Voyager was sort of a copy of a copy, it was a Star Trek trope show, Deep Space Nine...
Thoroughly original.
Totally original, and it took something. We had seen space stations before, whether they were star bases or K-7 or Space Dock or from Star Trek the Motion Picture. The idea of a place...
1001.
The idea that these star bases were talked about from the very beginning of Star Trek, and apparently they would also have vibrant life to them. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you would set people make fun of the idea, well, the adventure comes to us. Or I think Brandon Braga might have even said that. The adventure is going to come to us in this show or something. Or maybe Brandon said, how can something happen? I don't know. And truly, you saw exactly how it could happen. You know, it's a frontier. It's a fort,
right,
on the frontier.
It's a western.
It is a western, and yet you're in the middle of this political, the idea of having the wormhole and how it became this transit point for the galaxy, and it became this very important strategic position. All of that was very, very interesting, and it delved into, you talk about wagon train to the stars. This was the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thought experiment for you, right? So, workforce. Again, I don't even know what I'm talking about because I don't remember it. But
you didn't show it to your staff.
I didn't show it to my staff. Maybe they saw it. They didn't tell me. I didn't know. Can you imagine, or I'm trying to imagine an episode, a two-parter in the seventh season of Deep Space Nine that would have been about the crew of Deep Space Nine being turned into temps at a company. And I think I would have been mad. I think I would have been a little bit mad.
Yeah.
Because what made Deep Space Nine work was all the characters were great. The casting was amazing, just across the board. They always had things to do that were interesting that grew organically out of the situation that they were in.
Yeah.
There was never a moment where I felt like we're reaching. Even when it was they're living somebody else's life, you get far beyond the stars for the love of God,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which there's no way to overrate. Yeah.
Little Green Man is underrated.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, totally. And I think, you know, the thing that I feel very strongly about that show is that in many ways, especially as it went on, it became the real successor to the things that I particularly liked about the original series. An episode I think is super underrated is For the Uniform, which is
great.
About Sisko hunting down Commander Eddington,
yeah,
who's
Eddington,
betrayed
yeah,
Starfleet,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his decision at the end, like, I'm going to destroy all of the outposts simultaneously. I will kill effing everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, and how that all resolves is just fascinating. But it's such a Kirk baller move.
And what's the like core with Alzheimer's one, or where core feels like he's nowhere has a place in the Empire, mm-hmm. and so he's doing all this crazy stuff, and he can't remember, and he's screwing everything up, and you know his Worf went to bat for him, and then ultimately he makes the ultimate sacrifice. That's a great episode. I don't remember what it's called, but it was. I mean, okay. So Deep Space Nine.
Well, it's ironic though that it's about Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. We keep talking about Deep Space Nine. We talked a little bit about Voyager. You mentioned immunity syndrome for the original. Is there an Enterprise episode?
I was just going to throw one out.
Yeah,
Cogenitor.
UPN next Wednesday. An alien race gives a whole new meaning to close encounters of the third kind.
Maybe we could sleep together.
They need three to mate.
I'm pretty familiar with how it works with two sexes, but...
Oh, well, I have pictures.
A provocative all-new Enterprise. Cogenitor. UPN next Wednesday at 8, 7 Central.
Yeah.
Which I talked about.
Yeah, Cogenitor's
you know,
really good.
To me, yeah, we talked about this on the best Star Trek episodes. Cogenitor is an episode where the Enterprise, the NX-01, comes across another spacefaring race. It's got a first contact story element to it.
Mm-hmm.
They come across another very nice race, and they're both exploring.
Nice.
They're both exploring the same sun. You know, the coronal activity.
Let's do it together.
Sun. Yeah, they're let's cooperate, yeah. And then they start sharing all their. These people seem perfectly delightful, and instead of harboring some dark secret that you uncover. You find out something about their society, that they are a three-gendered civilization, and they require, in order to reproduce, a third gender. And this,
I didn't say a third nipple like Scaramanga.
No, I'm Scaramanga. Third gender. And so this gender, this third gender is completely this put-upon underclass. They're not allowed to read. They're not allowed to be educated. And of course, Trip, most of all, is horrified by this.
Yeah.
He's
the only one.
Right, and he's the only one, and he can't believe that this civilization is so great in every other way has this. They're completely blind to the fact that they treat this third gender as a non-entity.
Yeah,
and he can't get it. And as a Star Trek episode, it's one of the most compelling. It's totally Star Trek through and through. I love this episode so much. Nobody ever talks about it.
No, and it's really good.
And he interferes. Trip interferes, and he can't. Which, you know, goes back to the idea of the Prime Directive. And yet, I mean, this is just their society. We are judging. We as viewers are forced into Trip's position. And I always am like, this is terrible. This is terrible. But these other people, they're so nice that it makes you as a viewer really conflicted.
Yeah.
And you really are asking yourself when you're watching it, I would do the same thing Trip
is doing.
That's
what the best science fiction does.
Absolutely.
It's great. And you know, I'm not a huge Enterprise fan, but I love that episode. I really like Broken Bow, the pilot, I think is really good. Obviously In a Mirror Darkly, but that's the trials and tribulations of that show.
Right.
It's like, it's not really an episode of Enterprise, so it doesn't really count.
Right.
You got to evaluate it on its own, and it is great for what it is. But, you know, it's like, it's stolen valor. It's like, well, if you like the original, we're going to give you as close to making an original episode as we can. And Mike Sussman did just a marvelous job with that. And then, but I like the pilot, but there's not a ton of episodes of that show that I like would go back to and get excited about.
You know, I think if Enterprise had leaned more heavily into sci-fi concepts, I think Cogenitor was a simple episode in terms of its conception.
Very skillfully done.
Really, really well done, and it really, the idea of a third gender is so simple, especially now. Mm. You watch it now with all of our talk about pronouns and how we're going to deal in our own
civilization. Gender-free bathrooms. Yeah.
Gender-free bathrooms.
Yeah.
Here's the idea that, here's a society that has a third gender, and that's the
Clever. And you know what else is a great episode of that series? The Forge, the Garfield Reeves Stevens show.
So good.
Yeah. And it ties into yesteryear, and that's a really good episode. The rest of it, it was a three-episode or one of those two-episode arcs, and the rest of it isn't very good, but that first episode is really excellent.
But a lot of that fourth season, those three-episode arcs, the two-episode arcs, there was a couple of great stories. Yeah. And I think it ended on a great, well, the final episode wasn't good, but Demons and Terra Prime.
Oh, with Peter Weller.
Yeah, with,
That's very relevant today.
Absolutely.
Because it's basically Trump and his ilk, you know, who want to have nothing, you know, xenophobia, fear of the other, you know, fear of the immigrant. It's awful.
Or the intermixing of races, you know, humans and Vulcans, how can you have a child?
Miscegenation,
And I think that that's
for the guy who said, I learned a lot of vocabulary words on Inglourious Trekspert. I'm trying to throw out as many words as possible to help you with this whole vocabulary thing. You know, it's not like syndrome, but
why do you think I love The Incredibles so much? The villain's name was Syndrome. And I'm like, wow, I wasn't the only one who loved
that
word.
That's an episode that's overrated. Paradise Syndrome.
Yeah.
That's not a great episode. It's great because the score is great. And it's great because it has location filming. And it's great because Shatner gets to go way over the top.
Miramani.
But that's not a good episode.
No. But it does establish the preservers and the idea that humanoids were seeded throughout the galaxy by a much more advanced alien race.
Yes. But that was only picked up by the novels.
Well, it's sort of... I was projecting it onto The Chase.
No, it is absolutely
The Chase is underrated.
Yeah,
I like
true.
The Chase.
It absolutely is.
Norman Lloyd is in it. You know, you got from Seconds,
Salome Jens, who later became the founder.
Yeah, and that's a fun episode. It's very atypical Next Gen because it's just fun.
But
it's
also has a big sci-fi idea at its core. We're all brothers.
We're all connected. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the preservers from the Paradise Syndrome.
See, it was picked up.
That was Ron Moore. Yeah. Ron Moore picked up on it because Ron Moore is awesome. Because he always was trying to find ways to connect stuff to the original.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. I mean, obviously,
yes, Rob.
You've covered Star Trek so long and you have such insight into it. A lot of people, what I find interesting about our culture today, everybody wants everything to be either a 10 or it's a 1.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's no
middle ground.
There's no middle ground. And as you pointed out, that there's a lot to love in, I would say, mid-range episodes.
Right.
Maybe you have another word. Something that it might not be a best of both worlds or a City on the Edge of Forever. It might be a 6 or a 7 or an 8.
Could you imagine on the original Star Trek when we were kids, if we only watched the best and the worst?
Oh, my God.
I mean, it would be 10 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have those 5 great episodes, and you'd have those 5 awful episodes. Because everything else was kind of mid-range.
Yeah.
You know, and there were, like, things that were really cool about them and things that were really screwed up. And it's like you got to take what you like about it and embrace it and then disregard what doesn't work. You're losing out on so much if your standards are at the point where it has to be, everything has to be great.
Next episode, the most middling of the episodes.
And it's kind of like, you know, it's the same thing with the production values on original Star Trek. How many times did they repurpose the same sets? Did they repurpose things? You know, with something, you know, just, you know, score. We talked about it. You know, imagine now, people say, oh, it's the same score. It's a doomsday machine. I can't watch that. That's terrible. Cheap show. Awful.
But this, you know? I mean, when we were growing up, like even when you and I first met, we would talk about what we loved. You know, there were things that, that you and I would both admit, well, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but
it's
like,
cool.
Like Wise Guy.
Yes.
Wise Guy was a show we bonded over.
It was
both,
the greatest thing in the world.
But as the seasons went on,
it got
that
worse,
first
yes.
season with Ray Sharkey.
But we stuck with it. Yes.
We stuck with it.
Until the bitter end.
Right.
There was still, I mean, the Dead Dog Records arc was maybe not the best
but you
arc.
We kept watching it.
But we loved it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It didn't have to be. Nowadays, I feel that there is
had,
this.
You know why? Because it had Captain Terrell in it. Because Paul Winfield was in it as the head of Dead Dog Records. So, of course, right. because, you know, Captain Terrell was in it. You tertiary connection to Star Trek, we would stick with.
But even
of course, you mean Darmok.
Yes,
Darmok. Yes. You're right.
When the walls fell.
Even middling episodes like the Rick Pinzolo, the garment industry episodes. But with Star Trek, you know, there was a lot to love about the concept, the characters, and even when something wasn't delivering, you know,
how much would we have lost if we were not willing to watch mediocre sci-fi? We would have never watched an episode of Space 1999. Maybe that would have been a good thing. But we would have never watched Buck Rogers.
No, right.
And, you know, the original Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
I mean, and
The Fantastic Journey.
It's like, you know, and you could say even the best of the original Galactica, Hand of God, War of the Gods, they were very good at best. You know, they were never masterpieces, you know.
Right.
And it's like, I freaking love that show. Because, and, you know, and Buck Rogers, too. Flight of the War Witch is on the scale of great sci-fi television, it's probably I can't see the floor from here.
Right.
But still, I love that.
I did too.
The middle, I think, gives us context for the things that we love. Right? I mean,
yes.
All the episodes that we can
leave it to
barely
to bring
name,
it all home.
Right? Like, you know, there's something about Man Trap that makes City on the Edge of Forever feel better. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
There's something about you know, Requiem for Methuselah, like that cast the Tholian web in a completely different light. You know, there's all of these things have an interplay, and like just because of the relationship between Spock and Kirk and the things and how they feel about each other. So we build that as fans. Like we internalize that. We try to impose our own continuity on these things. And because of that, when these big things happen in these episodic shows, there is, I think, an emotional continuity that delivers. And that's what we're missing. I think maybe it's something that we've kind of lost forever in the age of short orders and everything is one giant arc.
Well, and everything costs $10 million. It's like, you know, Discovery, whether you love it or hate it, it couldn't get away with going to the back lot and shooting the 20th century set or having a salt shaker be a medical piece of equipment. You know, it's like the expectations. I mean, you look at that pilot, that second season premiere where they're on the asteroid and they're, you know, it's like it has to have the production values of a feature film. And is that really necessary if you give us interesting characters and interesting stories? No. And yet this is a show that they're probably spending $10 to $12 million an episode on, which is absurd. Yeah. So,
Well, like you pointed out, Ashley, I think that even episodes in Star Trek where you don't have the overt, you don't have a doomsday machine, but with an episode like Requiem for Methuselah, which is basically a drawing room story, you're in a couple of rooms talking about art, you know, and watching somebody play a waltz, you know, and Kirk dances. There's enough in terms of character and story that keep them, that make them all compelling, even in Star Trek episodes that aren't so good. Like, I never liked Miri.
Yeah.
I never liked Miri. It was not a great episode. As a kid, I didn't like Miri.
Never liked Miri.
But the premise was interesting. I'm like, what happened to this civilization? What was it like living through that disease outbreak? Even as a kid, I'm like, okay, we're seeing the aftermath where they don't even have showers. You know, this sucks to live in this episode. I don't want to be here.
And
there's not hot girls.
It's a duplicate of the Earth.
Right. It's you're like, okay, Hodgkin's,
it's
whatever.
It's the 40 acres backlot in Culver City.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing great, but there was something about it. I mean, the fact that Yeoman Rand might die of a disease that's crawling up her legs, and there was enough in there that it was compelling.
Yeah.
And even as a kid, I loved these characters, but I would watch.
Right.
Nowadays, I feel like audiences, you know, the MCU, for instance, Thor of the Dark World, that movie sucked. Iron Man 2 sucked. And I'm like, no, they're kind of like Star Trek. There's enough in those movies with our characters that we like and situations that they're enjoyable
Such
to watch.
Such a great point. I like what he said about Mantrap, because that's not an episode I don't think any of us really like.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you look at it, and I could give you six scenes that I love in that. I love when what it says about our characters when they each see Nancy Crater at the beginning and see her something. How much does that help us define who our characters?
Right.
Kirk sees her a certain way. You know, the ensign sees her a certain, security guard sees her a certain way. McCoy sees her a certain way. And then, you know, that scene where he escapes to the planet and they're trying, she, you know, to track from orbit,
right.
You know, to find, and I mean, and then the whole phaser thing in the ruins. I mean, it's like there's, and then of course the creature at the end is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, now it'd have to be some gazillion dollar CGI thing, you know, as opposed to this really great monster in a suit,
right.
Which is iconic, which today,
yeah.
I mean, if there's anything about Mantrap we remember, it's that monster.
Scary as hell.
Well, you know, yeah. there's a moment in that episode when Uhura meets the creature
right.
disguised as that handsome black dude
right.
who knows she speaks Swahili.
Which is creepy.
Yeah. It's yeah. so scary.
It's so scary.
But I love it.
Yeah.
I love
great.
That moment.
Yeah.
As I've gotten older, I'm like, wow, that's a
because
moment I really
appreciate.
Because you know
there's something off and that she's in danger. And you really feel
yeah.
that she could get killed. And it's like, no, don't trust that guy.
Right.
You know?
She's not above the law. He's speaking Swahili. Yeah. No one else speaks Swahili on the ship.
Don't trust the Swahili guy who speaks Swahili.
Why haven't you met him before? Yeah. You would know.
Yeah. It's only 437 people. And you're the communications officer. You should know everyone.
Yeah. Crewman, do I know you?
Don't you have the yearbook?
In a way, ma'am.
Oh, it's so good.
So good.
Creepy
so,
and wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny. I mean, you talk about, you're right. I mean, this mediocre thing, and it's like people just do not tolerate mediocre. Same reason now people don't go to the movies unless it's huge. It's like the $200 million movie, you know? They don't go to see the $40 million movie. I'll wait for it to come to Netflix.
Right.
Well, you know, you're not going to have any of those movies anymore because, you know, who's paying for them? Because nobody's going to see them. And it's that whole expectation that, you know, we should serve us. We've all become the Borg. You know, it's just like we just got to keep, you know, they're just acquiring all
things,
this.
We only want things. This is our Black Mirrors. And we only want things that give us the ultimate in satisfaction, mm-hmm. whereas sometimes satisfaction can be found in smaller things, in yes. smaller increments.
That's what she said.
Anyway, well, listen, this was, again, a far more fascinating conversation than I ever anticipated.
And perhaps underrated.
You could say that. And we might have to visit this place again because it's. I think there's a lot more to talk about. But Ashley has to go to the dentist. So I want to thank everyone for joining us, particularly Mark Burnett and Ashley Miller. And I want to thank you, the audience, for coming back for the second season of Inglourious Trekkers and actually staying with us. And if you're a fan of this podcast, you may want to check out Electric Surge's other podcasts, like The 430 Movie, every Friday, in which a group of writer and producers curate fantasy theme weeks of classic movies, as well as The Rebel and the Rogue, a Star Wars podcast, which is streams every Tuesday. And, of course, The Best Movies Never Made, which is available every other Monday. And I highly recommend that podcast. It's really, really terrific. If you've enjoyed this podcast, it is also very terrific. Please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And you can follow us on Inglourious Trek on Twitter or Inglourious Trekkers on Instagram. We love your feedback, by the way. We actually do look at it, and it's nice. I don't know if we would have rushed back into the studio if we weren't getting all that all that crap about not wanting to miss an episode. Also, a very special thanks to Bill Ritter, who makes it all possible. He's behind the board. He makes us sound good, and he's cheers us on, keeps us going. And, of course, Natalie Muscali, our producer, and Dean Devlin, without whom none of this would have been possible, keeps the lights on. And we thank all of you for making this possible and giving us a home for this show, which continues to just grow in popularity. So thank you, everybody, for your support. It's really been very gratifying. So until next Saturday, keep on trekking. Ingloriously, of course. And now here comes the turbo lift sound.
It's not the turbo lift sound.
It's the turbo lift sound.
It's the Enterprise speeding past us. Listen.
Sounds like a turbo lift to me.
I'm totally hearing turbo lift.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, engage.
This show is produced by Dean Devlin and Mark A. Altman and is an Electric Surge Network production.